Welcome back to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger here on Redbox Media. And today, we have a familiar person back. It is Eric Sammons. You might remember him from a few episodes ago when we discussed his book, The Old Evangelization, How to Spread the Faith Like Jesus Did, from Catholic Answers Press. Eric's a former evangelical. He entered the church in 1993. He's been involved in Catholic evangelization efforts for more than two decades, including 5 years as a diocesan director of evangelization. He's a father of seven, author of several books, and a professional writer, editor, and he has a website, Swimming Upstream, which can be found at ericsammons.com. Today we're talking about a totally different type of book. And first, welcome back, Eric Sammons.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back, Pete.
Awesome. Well, the way this all came together, Eric, you sent me a little email about a book you have out, a short story, and something that's a total departure from the past book of yours I read, so I'm quite interested in talking about today. And the title of that book is The Profession, A Short Story. So can you tell us a little bit about what that book is about?
Sure. It's really a total departure for me as well, because it's really my first foray into fiction writing. And what it was, it came about because I've always been fascinated by, I've always read a lot of science fiction, futuristic stories. Like a lot of people, I get interested in the dystopian type novels and things of that. I think they're a little overdone these days, I know, but I just was trying to picture take today and go forward. And I set the book in 2049, which is somewhat arbitrary, but go forward in the future, and how would trends today, how would they play out if they continued like they are? And really, some of the best science fiction I've ever read is like that. They take situations that are a certain way today, and then they extrapolate them into the future. And that's what I wanted to do. So the basic setting is, it's an ordinary Catholic guy living in 2049. He's a computer programmer. He's living in America. And he it's a short story of what happens to him when something very major happens in his life. He's thrust into a dramatic situation, and really the key was, how does he respond to that? And the setting is, just to give a little bit more about the setting, at that point, Islamic caliphates have taken over Europe. And so all of Europe, except for England, is under the control of Islamic governments. And the Pope has fled to Rome. And I mention those things, but they're not really part of the story in the sense I'm not going deep into that. Mm-hmm. It's more just the setting of living under that type of situation. What would it be like, and what would happen if you're kind of thrust into a situation, a dramatic situation, and so how does he respond to that?
Right. Now, you said it was your first foray into Catholic fiction, and that's part of the discussion I want to have today. As you've mentioned earlier, you spent a lot of years in evangelization efforts, and you know, it seems like Catholic fiction is starting to take off. There's been a number of titles, and as a reviewer myself for the last 5 years, I've seen an increase in Catholic fiction. How can people who pick up Catholic fiction expect to learn the faith in that? I mean, how is it woven in? How did you go about doing that in your own book?
Yeah, and really that is part of what I'm doing here. And what I see is, I've been, like you mentioned, I've been involved in evangelization for over 25 years, and what I found is often evangelization that is explicit, so to speak, isn't always the most effective thing. And sometimes, because not everybody is going to pick up a book from Catholic Answers. I mean, I've written for them, I know that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not going to pick up a book from Ignatius Press or something like that. But they might pick up an interesting story. They might be interested, and that's one of the reasons I love short stories myself, because in our busy lives today, often it's hard to pick up a novel even, but you can pick up a short story, read it very quickly one evening just for fun, and hopefully you walk away from it with maybe just thinking about the characters and how they reacted to situations, and how does that impact how you react to situations. So I really feel like fiction can be a great means of evangelization. Now, I want to be careful here, because over the past, I don't know, 20, 30 years, I've read a lot of Christian fiction as well, and a lot of it's bad. Let's just be honest. Yeah. A lot of it is, it's preachy. it's too much trying to you can tell the author's most important thing he's thinking of doing or she's doing is imparting a message. And that's not good fiction. Really good fiction is they're telling a story, an interesting story. Yes, mm-hmm. there might be a message in there, but it's more about the story, and then hopefully the message kind of just seeps through. You see that with the great writers like Tolkien. You know, when he wrote Lord of the Rings, there's nothing explicitly Catholic about it. There's no message being told that's, like, in your face. But yet anybody who's read it knows it's a deeply Catholic work. And it very much does give a message, and it gives a whole ordered universe, and it helps you to see the world in a certain way. Yet he never explicitly tries to do that. So I think that's what I'm trying to do here as well, and what I see others trying to do is, let's write fiction that's first and foremost good stories with good characters. And hopefully they will then permeate a certain Catholicness. Like my story, The Profession, is somewhat explicitly Catholic, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to be good Catholic fiction, so to speak. It can be, you know, there's a famous quote by Flannery O'Connor. She said, "The Catholic novelist doesn't have to be a saint. He doesn't even have to be a Catholic. He does, unfortunately, have to be a novelist." So the most important thing is a good story. And then after that, it needs to be something where it really gives that message, maybe an evangelistic message, or maybe a message of just how the universe should be ordered.
Right. And, you know, I want to get back to this a little bit. You raised an interesting point that some people are not going to pick up a book from Catholic Answers. And I think, you know, one of the missions of Redbox Media is to connect the unconnected. And those type of people that are feeling over-churched aren't going to pick up that type of book. So I think Catholic fiction has a real opportunity to reach those people and reveal things about the faith to them without sounding preachy.
Right. Right, exactly. And I think, I mean, I know a lot of people in my just daily life that they're basically decent people. Some are Catholic, some are not. And they have zero interest in theology. Mm-hmm. They have zero interest in apologetics. And they just don't have – you could not pay them to pick up a book on, you know, a Scott Hahn book. And as right. you know, Scott Hahn books are not hard to read.
No, they're not.
Lots of people do read them. But some people just have no interest in that. And yet, so that's why we need to find other inroads. And you see that with, you know, hopefully good videos, like good movies, good television shows, things like that, that convey a message. Because the problem is that today, most fiction, most movies, most TV, it has a very underlying anti-Christian viewpoint. I just recently got a book at the local Half Price Books. And it was like the best science fiction short stories of 2015 or something like that. I can't remember the year, but I think it was something like that. Hmm. Well, I go through and I read these stories, and there's probably about 30 or 40 stories. Every single one almost – there was one that stood out that was different, but almost every single one had a major character that was homosexual, was something of that nature, something, you know, that goes against Catholic belief. And it just was pushed at you so much. And so that's what most people are reading, is things like that. And so we need to insert into that Catholic fiction that is interesting even for a non-Catholic to read. That's the thing. If it's good Catholic fiction, a non-Catholic can read it and find it a good story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be where you have to be Catholic to understand it or anything like that. And that's really how we evangelize too, is because then we can give it to a friend who might never read a Scott Hahn book, may not know the difference between transubstantiation and the Trinity, but they would read a good story.
Mm-hmm. Right. And without giving too much away of your story, of this story, because again, it is a short story. Let me see here. It's 20 pages long. But in that 20 pages, you delivered a pretty gripping tale. And what I thought was pretty amazing about the book, again, I'm trying not to give too much away about it, but you have interwoven current events, set it in the future, but you made it realistic to the point where I'm sitting here reading this going, man, this could happen tomorrow.
Right. And what I try to do when I've read science fiction, particularly futuristic stories, is some the ones I don't like are the ones that seem to leap too far in a short amount of time. Like maybe it's set 20 years in the future and all of a sudden we've colonized Mars. well, that's not going to happen. And so it just seems kind of unrealistic to me. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do is just kind of make it where just a natural development from today. And I, for example, how we interact with others through social media and through the internet. I try to evolve that to what's that going to be like 20, 30 years down the road? How is it going to be different from today? Because if you think about today, for example, how we interact with people on Facebook, Twitter, things like that, compared to even 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. it really has evolved. And so what I'm trying to say, look at is, how would that look 30 years down the road? How will we interact with others? And so I try to integrate that into the story. And I try to integrate because the whole idea of how a lot of with Islamic terrorism, radical Islamic terrorism, and really overtaking Europe in a lot of places, and how the response in Europe has been, in many cases, not very strong. Well, what would happen if they won, if all of a sudden they did take over most mm-hmm. of Europe? How would that look? How would the world look then? And so those type of things really set the stage. But really the most important thing to me in the story is the characters, the main characters. Philip Russell is the main character, his good childhood friend Matthew, kind of revolve around them and just as ordinary people living that. Because that's the thing is, you know, it's not always about, okay, how is the president, you know, a lot of books might be about that. How would the president be in 2049 or how would a military leader, something like that. I'm more interested in how would just ordinary Joe, mm-hmm. how would he be in that type of situation? How would he, what would his life be like? And how would he react if he's kind of thrust into some type of situation?
Right, right. Well, Eric, I'd like to take a quick break. We're going to come back and I want to talk a little bit more about Catholic fiction. And also I want to touch upon what pointers you might have for someone that wants to enter into that field of writing. So, with that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Pete Sox, the Catholic Book Blogger, here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back. About that, we covered the last segment. So Eric, I want to get into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts of this. How does one get into writing Catholic fiction? I think that probably is much easier to get into than say something more theological like your book The Old Evangelization. And I think the benefits of Catholic fiction to those out there right now in the pews is pretty profound. It can really reach people at their level.
Yeah, I agree. I think a couple things. Right. If you want to write Catholic nonfiction, you better be an expert in something. I mean, you better have potentially a degree, some experience, because really that's what makes Catholic nonfiction. You're going to listen to people who are authorities. That's why people would buy your books, and that's how you can write the books with knowledge and all that. Whereas Catholic fiction, you don't necessarily have to have a deep knowledge of some field. Now, what you really do need, though, is first you have to be able to write fiction, and then you have to be Catholic. I mean, that's kind of the way, you know, it's like they're not, it's not really necessarily you have to be able to write Catholic fiction. It's more a matter of you have to learn how to write fiction first. And of course, you have to live your life as a Catholic, because if you do, you'll see the world in a certain way. And the world you create then will naturally be shaped by that. That's the key, because like I mentioned Tolkien before, he's a perfect example of somebody whose entire world was shaped by his Catholicism. And so when he created Middle Earth, that was shaped by the same order, the same structure that our world has, even though it had these fantastical things in it, you know, right, with elves and orcs and all these other things. Yet it was still ordered like a Catholic view of the world is ordered. So I would say first of all, just make sure you know you're living as a Catholic, because I think that will help you understand how the world should look and how your worldview. Then, as far as just writing fiction, I've always thought the number one best way to learn how to write is to write. You just have to get started, and you have to overcome the fear that you have, and it's a real fear, and I've had it too, when you first show somebody else something you've written, because it's your baby, you love it, and then you show it to somebody, and if they're not jumping for joy at it, then you're just, oh, it's the worst. I still remember, this is a great story, my first nonfiction book I wrote was about 10 years ago, and it was Who is Jesus Christ? It was published by our Sunday Visitor. And I didn't tell my wife I was doing this. She went on a vacation with the kids. I had to stay home and work, so I was home alone for like a week. And I basically wrote a draft of the book, maybe not the whole book, but a lot of it in that week. She comes back, and I tell her, you know, I've written a book. And she was shocked, first of all, because she didn't know I was interested in this, because I was kind of afraid to tell her. Now, my wife also is an editor. I mean, literally, that's her. She's a stay-at-home mom, but she's done editing as a job before. Okay. So it's doubly fearful to give it to her. But she immediately said to me, she goes, do you know how hard it is to write, before she even looked at it, how hard it is to write something good that is really going to be something that is well-written? I said, I know. And I said, but I was scared of that. So I gave it to her. And basically what she told me, unfortunately she's my wife so she can say things, she goes, I love the ideas in here. I love what you're trying to say, but we really need to work on how you say it. And it was her nice way of saying the writing just wasn't very good, but I did have a good idea. And so then I had to spend a lot of time getting it written. If I looked at that first draft, that first book today, I would cringe and I would be embarrassed. I don't want anybody. I've kept it locked up in my attic because I don't want anybody else to see it. I like to look back at it to remind me that really writing is about just putting ideas down first and foremost. Write something, whatever you know, write it first and keep writing, and then eventually you get better at writing. And the other big thing about other than writing is, you have to involve somebody else. You have to let somebody else see it. Because if you're just writing and you're the only one seeing it, you have blind spots. And you can't really improve until you're pushed. And you need somebody you can trust who has some abilities in this area and that you can give to. And they're going to give you constructive criticism. Because I don't know anybody who just starts writing and the first thing they write is great. It usually is pretty bad. And then you just have to keep working at it. So I think that's kind of the – and that's really for any type of writing, both fiction and nonfiction. But I think it's especially true with fiction. The nice thing is you can give it to almost anybody because most people have read fictional books and they know what they like. And so they can look at something and say, yeah, that's I like that, or, you know, this character. You know, the funny thing is I actually gave this book, The Profession, my first foray into fiction, I gave it first to my 18-year-old daughter. Because she's homeschooled and she just finished her senior year. She's going off to college in the fall, and she had been doing short stories. It was one of her topics of study this past year, and it was great. She gave me great advice. She's like, oh, you know, this one character, Matthew, you didn't really flesh him out. I didn't really identify. I didn't really understand why I cared about him, and advice like that. And it's great because I knew Matthew, a character in the story. I knew him very well. I knew everything about him. But, of course, that doesn't mean I was able to show everything about him when I wrote the story. And so advice like that, you got to have somebody else who can help you to realize those type of things.
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned you're a science fiction fan. What type of fiction really draws you in and grabs you yourself?
Well, I think I like mostly character-driven. I mean, I do like certain settings. But I do like science fiction the most. It doesn't have to be, for me, it doesn't have to be necessarily Catholic. I like good stories, and I think older stories I like better. Like Philip Dick is a very famous science fiction writer, and he writes some weird stuff. And I'm not necessarily recommending all his stuff, because some of his stuff I've been like, whoa, that's just too bizarre for me. But he sets up a world that is very it's very different yet very believable. I think that's probably what I like the best, is when I read stories in a world that may be very different from ours. Maybe it's set in the future. Maybe it's a fantasy world. Yet it's very believable. It's all internally consistent. Nothing drives me crazier than when I'm reading a story and all of a sudden I'm like, that doesn't really fit with the it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't all come together. And so I think stories where things come together, I like especially. I also like stories that are difficult in the sense of not difficult to read, but maybe difficult to really to read in the sense of they tell some hard truths and some hard things. A book that became very famous recently, is very controversial in the Catholic world, I know, is the book Silence by Indo, I can't remember, because the movie came out, and I've never seen, I haven't seen the movie. In fact, I've heard the movie didn't do a great job in some ways. I love the book, and I know the book says, it's about the apostasy of a priest. It's very difficult reading, but I feel like it really reflects what actually it probably has happened. The difficulty of when you're in that situation of apostatizing, when you have to choose between martyrdom and apostasy, we wouldn't praise the martyrs if there weren't some people who committed apostasy. If it was just a guarantee that anybody in that situation becomes a martyr, well, it's not a big deal. But the fact is, some people have chosen to apostatize over the years, and that's why we praise the martyrs so much. And so that's a story that I love, and I know it doesn't have a neat and tidy ending. It doesn't have a situation where you feel good about yourself even after it's done, but it really does make you enter into that person and who the main character who apostatizes and just say, okay, why did he do that? And why do some people do that and others don't? And I think those are great types of questions.
Yeah, I have seen the movie. I have not read the book. So I'm coming at it in the opposite direction. And I got the same feeling at the end of that movie. You know, what drove him to do what he did? And it really did get you thinking about, what would I do in that situation? And that, to me, is a good story.
Right, and the book, by the way, what I understand the difference is that the endings are very different. At the end, the ending of the book very much makes it you are not sympathetic at all with the main character who apostatized in the sense that you realize his life is miserable after he did that. And I think from what I understand, because I haven't seen the movie, is it kind of whitewashes that a little bit. And so that's why I haven't really gotten on to seeing the movie yet. But the book, I think, does a great job of just saying, and what will life be like after you apostatize? I mean, that was very powerful to read.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take another break. We're here talking about Catholic fiction with Eric Sammons, the author of The Profession, A Short Story, and we'll be right back. Also discussing Catholic fiction. This is definitely a departure from other works I've read of yours, Eric, but I must say that The Profession was a very good book, very gripping book, and like good Catholic fiction, it fit the bill well. So we talked a little bit about the book Silence and some science fiction. Is there any other works that you can recommend specifically? Have you read any other Catholic fiction that you think would be good to turn people into this genre a little bit?
I think if we want to talk more explicitly Catholic fiction, especially more recently, of course, Michael O'Brien is probably the most well-known Catholic fiction writer today for Ignatius. And I really like some of his stuff, and I don't always like all of it. And I think sometimes his books, I like them. I don't want to say like too much. I don't want to start with the negative because I love Father Elijah. I like a lot of the stuff he's written. I would just say at times I felt like he does fall a little bit too preachy of what I was saying earlier of maybe telling a little bit more than showing. That's the big, you know, you asked earlier about advice for fiction. That's the number one advice always for fiction is show, don't tell. In meaning that you don't explicitly say necessarily what people believe or what they think, you show it in their actions. And I think sometimes O'Brien kind of has a tendency to go kind of long on telling and not always showing, and I think that sometimes it suffers a bit for that. But at the same time, he's a very good writer. I mean, my goodness, I don't want to be too critical of him. Mm-hmm. And so I like a lot of his stuff. A friend of mine actually and she writes mostly for young adults, Regina Doman. She's written a number of books, and I like those. I mean, they're not really geared for me, so it's not really what I'm saying for me, but my teenage daughters have liked them. And she's a friend of mine, I admit freely, so I probably am a little biased towards her. But she's got some great ideas on writing fiction as well, and I like what she's been doing as well.
Now, let's backtrack a little bit to probably the granddaddy of them all. We've mentioned it twice, and actually there's two of them, I think, that are probably the standard bearers for anybody writing any religious fiction today, and that, of course, is The Lord of the Rings and the Narnia series.
Right. Yeah, and of course, those are – I'm actually reading the Narnia series to my young ones right now. I just finished Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe, and now I'm doing Prince Caspian. And it's interesting because – of course, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe has gotten some criticism, including from Tolkien, because it's too explicit. It's too overt in its Christian message. I mean, Aslan is obviously Jesus, and it ties in very directly. I've never had a problem with that because I feel like Lewis was writing specifically for a younger audience than Tolkien was. Mm-hmm. And so Lewis, I mean, and I read the story to my 5-year-old and my 7-year-old just recently, and I think it's perfect for that age because the reading out loud, it's a perfect read aloud book because you each chapter is one good sitting, and it's easy for them to follow, and it's probably good it's more overt for them because they're not necessarily going to get anything too subtle. So obviously C.S. Lewis, that's the Narnia series is a great series of Christian fiction that I, you know, is kind of the standard bearer. And then Tolkien goes a different direction, but yet it's still kind of considered the classic of Christian fiction. Another I was going to mention is Dostoevsky, and I love him. And I of course, Brothers Karamazov is a great work of fiction, considered one of the greats, and I love it. I actually like Crime and Punishment better. And I would recommend those highly, really, for the Catholic fiction writer. Of course, it's very seeped in Christianity. He was an Orthodox Christian. And so those are great novels as well if you really want to see some deep Christian themes in fiction there. And I know they're well-known, but maybe they're not quite as well-known as, like, thinking of them as explicitly Christian fiction. I kind of think of them like that because they're so seeped in Christianity.
Mm-hmm. I think the big thing that really was the catalyst for Christian fiction in recent years was obviously, whether you agree with the byline in the story or not, was the Left Behind series.
Yes, that definitely made Christian fiction put it on the map, and it engendered lots and lots of bad Christian fiction too. The funny thing is my wife makes fun of me because I have a weakness for bad Christian fiction. I don't know why. I still read it. I will get it and I will read it, and I mean, I know it's like, yeah, I'll even cringe while I'm reading some of it, but yeah, the Left Behind series was definitely that really put it on the map as explicitly Christian, where it's clearly — now, see, Left Behind was clearly written for a Christian audience, and I think as Catholics, we should have a tendency maybe to be a little more subtle in the sense that, you know, we believe our faith is universal. It's mm-hmm. for everybody. And so you shouldn't have to be an evangelical, rapture-believing Christian, American Christian, in order to enjoy a book like Left Behind kind of is. Where, you know, Catholic fiction, really anybody, a Buddhist living in Asia should be able to read a good Catholic fiction and get something out of it, mm-hmm. and maybe come a little deeper in the understanding of a Catholic worldview from it, but to enjoy the story. Whereas the Left Behind series, of course, is very directed towards a very, I mean, very successfully directed as well towards a specific audience. And there's nothing wrong with that either, in the sense that not every fiction should be for everybody. I just think that as Catholics, we should be always broad-minded and be thinking, can we go maybe a little bit beyond our borders, so to speak, and reach out and tell a story that grips people who aren't necessarily in the pews with us?
Right, because as you mentioned, it was quite obvious that Left Behind was targeted at a niche, and it did very well because it really targeted that niche very well.
Yes, and good for them. I mean, you know, they marketed it well. They did, you know, and I read, I think I made it through... I think there's 12 books in the series. I made it through, I think, 8 before I finally gave up.
So, okay, we talked about Catholic fiction and everything. Where do you think it's heading today? As a writer yourself, where do you think the market for Catholic fiction is heading today? Because probably one of the things that I've been lax in as a book reviewer and doing it for 5 years is I haven't featured much Catholic fiction, and probably I should.
I think, I'm hoping it's growing. I'm hoping it's becoming more and more prevalent. The truth is there's just not a lot of publishers that are going to necessarily publish books that are more explicitly Catholic. I mean, my story is politically incorrect. It definitely is. And it unlikely would ever be published by most major publishers just simply for that fact. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't even matter if it was the best written story ever. Just because it simply does not abide by, like I mentioned earlier, how the top science fiction stories of 2015, every one of them had a very, there was one exception. I'm trying to remember the name of that one. But anyway, almost every one of them had a very liberal bent and very much pushed kind of the liberal worldview of sexuality and all that. And so a story that kind of goes against that, it's going to be hard. And so what I'm hoping is that maybe more Catholic publishers kind of arise and start publishing some of this stuff, some good works. I think there is good work out there. I think it's very difficult, though, to promote it. And some people – also, I'm a big believer. I think self-publishing – you know, a lot of stuff that self-publishes crap. But I do think a lot of it, people can, you know, The Martian, that movie, The Martian, that was a self-published book initially.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved it, and then it got picked up by a major publisher, became a movie, and I've read that. That's a great book. I like that book. So I think really, I think Catholic writers just need to go out there and put their stuff out there and do what they can, you know, listen to advice, listen to criticism and improve and continue to push it out there. And I think then we can really create a market out there that may not really be served, because the Christian market, you know, the evangelical Christian fiction market is huge. The Catholic fiction market is still, I think, in an embryo stage.
Mm-hmm. But you raise an interesting point about the whole self-publishing thing.
Right.
It almost makes it too easy for someone to publish a book. And the sad thing about that is, as you say, it could be garbage. And if they have the skills, the marketing skills to push it, they can push that garbage far beyond the landfill.
Yeah, I mean, that is – I mean, you know, it is funny because that is very true. I think probably the most successful self-publishing are – done by people who already have published maybe with traditional publishers.
Right.
They've proven they're a writer, they've proven they can get published, and they've proven they have an audience. And then they decide to self-publish because it's just is maybe more profitable for
mm-hmm.
them. And they have the ways they can reach their audience directly. Because, you know, with the internet and everything, technology, that's possible now. I think that might be where you have your most success. And I think everyone wants to get those diamonds in the rough. And boy, it can be rough in the self-published world. But, you know, you get a few diamonds out there. And I think, but the idea, though, is we just want, you know, if Catholics are just out there in the arts and really putting things out there, hopefully the cream will rise to the top.
Right, right. So you've dipped your toe into Catholic fiction. Is there more coming from Eric Sammons?
Yes, I very much am. I love doing this. I love the process of doing this. It's very different for me, and I found myself just engaged in it and captivated by it. I have one idea for hopefully a novel that is set very far in the future, and it's about includes space travel, includes finding alien life, and it's got religious themes, though, because like in my idea of it, most of humanity is a different religion that doesn't exist now, and there's a few Catholics left, but the encounter with this planet and what happens there really kind of shakes the foundations of that major religion. And that, I have this whole idea, and I started writing it, but that's probably going to take a while. And also, I'm thinking about taking the profession and maybe expanding. I've had a number of people say it'd be great as a full novel. And so I've thought about doing that as well, but I like doing the short story as well. So I'm sure I'll continue. I have ideas for short stories written all over the place. So I'll probably try to do some of those because they're just a little bit, you can have a little quicker turnaround time and get the feedback, which every writer loves having feedback.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there any nonfiction you're working on? Any other projects you can tell us about?
Right now I am not. I have a few things I've thought about doing, but I haven't really. My biggest nonfiction idea is I'm thinking about writing a book about a saint and having it try to read more like a fiction book, frankly, read more like a novel. I haven't decided on the saint yet. I have like a number of saints ideas, but I'm thinking about doing it towards teens because what I found is, like in my own family, I have kids ages 20 all the way down to 2. And what I found is there's great books for the kids to read on the saints until they turn about 12 or so. And then it just jumps up to adult ones, and they're not necessarily always ready for that.
Right.
And so what I'd love is maybe hit that middle, that market between not for little kids, not for adults, but for teens and aren't yet reading adult books, but they could get something out of that.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all we have time for today, Eric. Any closing thoughts before we leave?
No, I just encourage anybody who is thinking about writing to just put the pen on the paper or the keys on the fingers on the keyboard and just get writing. It's the only way you can get started.
Right. Oh, and we can't forget, where can they find your book, The Profession?
Okay, you can go on Amazon and just search for my name, Eric Sammons, Sammons, and you can download the Kindle version from them, or you can just go to my website, ericsammons.com, and it's right on the front page. You'll see something about The Profession, so just click the link.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Eric, for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us today. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic Book Blogger, and until next time, God bless.